Hello, and welcome to Loud and Clear, a podcast dedicated to amplifying the voices of women in music. I'm your host, Olivia Adams, and welcome to our series called YXE Divas, the artistic voices behind the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra's upcoming show. As part of this series, I'm interviewing each of the solo artists featured on the show, and we're releasing episodes as a lead up to the big event. Today, it is my pleasure to talk with Fallon Baptiste.
Fallon Baptiste is a proud Cree Métis singer-songwriter from Red Pheasant First Nation, Saskatchewan, and roots connecting her to Cumberland House, Saskatchewan. She is a teacher in Saskatoon, and she grew up singing at home as part of her family. Her late Muzum's grandfathers and Nukum's grandmothers, parents and siblings were first language Cree speakers. As an educator, motivated by the importance of preserving the language, she recorded two Christmas demos of O Holy Night and What Child Is This, translated into Cree in 2012. In 2014, Fallon released an additional two songs, Silent Night and O Come All Ye Faithful, also translated into Cree, and this led to her Cree Christmas album. As an Indigenous person, she believes that languages are powerful. Language was a gift given from the Creator and carries the teachings, songs, and ceremonies. Language is the spirit of what it means to be Indigenous, and hearing contemporary song translated into Indigenous languages stirs emotions and creates strong connection to the spirit. It also serves as a bridge connecting the voices of the past to those of the present. It is in preserving and revitalizing the Indigenous languages that we find healing and strength. There is great beauty among the Indigenous languages of Turtle Island, and you are really going to enjoy this conversation with Fallon Baptiste. We talk all about this and language revitalization and the importance of language preservation through music. So please enjoy.
Welcome, Fallon. How are you doing today? I'm really excited to chat with you.
I'm doing fantastic. I've been looking forward to our chat for quite some time, so I'm excited to be here.
I like to start all of my interviews off with the same question. And I wonder if you could tell us more about how you got into music, what led you down the path of becoming a musician?
I have a hard time calling myself a musician. You know, I just sing when people ask me to sing. But that might be the humility in me coming out. Right from, you know, when I was a little girl, my mom says I came out of the womb humming to myself. Mm-hmm. And I was always taught that if you have a gift, you have to share it, right? Mm-hmm. Not in a, hey, look at me, I can do this, but in a, I have something to offer other people. That is my role. And so you share the gifts that you have.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Well, through your music, you do a lot to translate well-known tunes into Cree and to help preserve and advance the Cree language. And you do this through your music. And I wondered if you could talk more about that and the importance of language preservation to you through your music.
It's become more and more, it's become sort of my passion. It has become my passion to work in the capacity of language revitalization or language preservation as a teacher. So professionally, personally, to enhance my own fluency. I was raised lucky to have been raised by two first language speakers and raised in an environment on my First Nation with people who were first language Cree speakers. And so there wasn't really a break in the transmission of traditional knowledge, Cree customs, Cree prayer, Cree spirituality. That's all intertwined with the language. And so I consider myself extremely blessed to have been nurtured as such. And so coming and going through my own Indigenous experience, having left the safety of my community, going to high school within the town, North Battleford, going into university. So immersing myself within mainstream society and finding an absence of anything that tied me to my indigeneity, I thought it was important to work in a capacity where I'm part of those people who are trying to preserve the core or the spirit of who we are as Nehiyawak or as Cree people or any Indigenous language, and do so in a way, again, sharing my gifts. How can I best do that? Well, I'm already, you know, a singer. I already sing. So let's use that as a platform. And on the flip side, throughout my life, there's always been people who have approached me by word of mouth. We're talking in the 90s when there wasn't an email and people just use old-fashioned phones attached to a wall and said, hey, there's this, you know, little girl from Red Pheasant who sings in Cree. And that spreading my word of mouth. So I'd be invited to these gatherings. And it didn't matter what the song was. Quite often it was Cree hymns, church hymns that were translated into Cree sometime in maybe the 40s or 50s, that I would sing Amazing Grace, How Great Thou Art. And the music itself is moving for all people, but the language was always moving. There was something in the language that connected with people, and people wanted to hear more of it. And when I went to do my Cree Christmas album, again, it was that connectivity that all people could connect to the music, whether you were a Cree language speaker or not, Indigenous or non-Indigenous. You could make a connection and build a relationship with the language. So,
yeah, that's so beautiful. And I wonder, let's jump to the Christmas album, because it's just such a beautiful offering for Christmas. I play it all Christmas season. I've enjoyed it since you released it. And I'm wondering, have you been able to see others sing in Cree at Christmas gatherings? Do you imagine that these are being used in educational settings and also like community and familial settings? What was sort of the inspiration or the push behind that album?
The album itself, it pays homage to those language keepers who came before me, the people who hung on to their language and their customs throughout the history of oppression. You know, we're talking, you know, coming into the 30s, 40s, 50s, all of the Geteyak, or the old people, all of our Gukums and Mushums, they hung on to that. So the album was in respect for those people, because growing up, I remember all of the old people having a reverence and a love for Christmas time, probably because it was special. It was a time when we celebrated the birthright of Jesus. It wasn't like a crossover or a leaving of their customs, but a reciprocal respect for the symbolism behind the day and the fact that everybody gathered and it was a special time. And so growing up, a lot of the old people, they loved the music, right? They loved what it represented. And so the Christmas album, that was sort of the, I guess, inspiration to do the album in respect for those people, but also, again, coming back to saying, how can I have people connect to the language? And I released a little recording back in 2000, and it might have been 16, 15, Oh Holy Night. I did it with a local artist, Keith Bartlett. We did some coffee houses and we recorded a YouTube video together, and it went viral. It was, you know, I think it's at maybe 30, 40,000. I don't even know anymore. And that again, that external desire of other people saying, hey, this is how I felt. This is what it did for me. People reaching out, people wanting copies, me printing copies with my computer with, you know, discs and stickers and mailing them. And then saying, you know, people want this. It was never, hey, I can market this. It was people want it. How can I provide it? So the goal was always to provide that language connection for the audiences who were wanting it. So,
yeah, I mean, and the goal, like, to me, it sounds like the goal was, it was just this natural sharing of language. And it wasn't, like you said, marketing, right? You weren't marketing yourself as an artist with a niche, but it just was natural.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, having people reach out to me still today, recently, a teacher from the north reached out and said, hey, we sang one of your songs. High school kids went out to a festival and they won first place. And not even knowing, you know, now that it's out there in these spaces for people to use as they need, you know, I'd love to hear more people sharing their stories, because I'd love to put it on my website. But I'm tremendously humbled and grateful that I've been able to provide that on some capacity, so all these little kids can connect. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Did you do some of the translations yourself, or were these ones that you grew up singing?
Some of them were already translated. I couldn't tell you who. I know that relationship building, the space that we're in of truth and reconciliation and the building of relationships was happening, you know, at a time early on. Otherwise, these translations wouldn't exist. So I had books, like literally bound books, you know, the old fashioned, they even smell old, you know, translations in syllabics and in what we call SRO, or Standard Roman Orthography. And then there was a First Nations ministry team that worked with the reserves out of North Battleford, and they had brought in hymns that had already been translated, partnerships between Indigenous and non-Indigenous ministry teams that just, you know, fuse the two worlds together. And so they had been provided for me. Some of the songs, I worked with Dr. Solomon Ratt out of the University of Regina, and he helped with the translations. And then there's my mom, Alvina, who has always been my mentor. So she works with me, and she worked with me on the album Nige. So
Amazing. Well, that I feel like that transitions so beautifully to my next question. And your album Nige, which translates to home, is just, it's stunning. I was listening to it the other day as I was writing my questions for and doing some research for this podcast. And I wondered if you could talk specifically about the title track and what drew you to the theme of home. And then can you talk about the through line of some of the originals mixed in with some of the hymns and how that contributes to your themes of home?
I had wanted to do my own album for quite some time. Like, I was coming off of the two Christmas albums, and I had a little girl. I have a daughter. She came into my life. Actually, the song My Love, My Life is about her. Came into my life, and I suppose the creator just knew I needed her. And so she was my inspiration as well. And the title track, Home or Nige, the title of the album is in relation to my sense of home, my feeling of home that lives within in connection to who I am as a Cree woman. The song Home itself was actually inspired. I read a book by Michelle Good, Five Little Indians. I don't know if you're familiar. Heart-wrenching, absolutely. Like, yeah. It took me months to get through it. I remember getting to page maybe 8 or 9, and I had to put it down, and tears were running down my face. Even now I can get emotional when I think about it. Pushing through that, I just had my daughter, and it was COVID. Life had just shut down, so I was trying to get through this book. And I remember it was summertime. I think I was midway through it. And I started to think of these people who our ancestors who were lost and looking for home in response to what happened through the residential school experience and thereafter the rippling effects of trying to find a sense of home and belonging. And that's where the inspiration for the song came from.
So then you do this beautiful mix of traditional church settings of hymns, as well as a mix of originals. And I wonder, can you talk more about the choice behind that?
Yeah, the gospel songs are in relation to my experience again. Personally, my maternal, paternal lines connect me to two different places. So my paternal line connects me to my dad, who's from Red Pheasant First Nation, who grew up, again, Cree language, Cree spirituality, Cree worldviews. So I guess we'd call that traditional. And then my maternal lines connect me to Cumberland House, Saskatchewan, which is a Métis settlement that was built as a result of, the fur trade and all of that that was happening historically. And so as a Métis woman, her worldviews are a hybrid combination of Cree, but also Catholic, Christian-based, that hybrid fusion of Cree and right, the French, the Scottish. Yeah. And so it's the album and the songs are in relation to who I am and my experiences. On the flip side, my Nugumpan, my Kukum, who passed away, my dad's mom, she went to residential schools at Delmas, and she learned about Catholicism there, but she didn't abandon her Cree spirituality. She instead drew parallels between the two ways of prayer. And so we were taught to always have a reverence for both forms of prayer. You could walk into a church and have a connection to the Creator. You could walk into a lodge and have a connection to the Creator. One didn't replace the other. It was prayer that was always important. And so I grew up in a strong space of prayer and reciprocity and respect. And so that's where the gospel songs come in. And I think that narrative is relative to a lot of people across Turtle Island who would have had the exact same experience. And so prayer was always instilled. It was always important. And so there's that reverence. It isn't an abandoning of our way, but a space of connecting to our spirituality, I suppose.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I can't remember. I'm thinking about the quote, to sing is to pray twice. And it sort of feels like that's what your album is doing. Like there's this beautiful through line. And I would say even just like looking at the tracks, someone might not think that there's that connection between, but like hearing you talk about that and then listening through to the album, it's just this whole experience. And it's stunning. There is a particular song on that album I wondered if you could talk about, because there is a line that just, it's stopped me in my tracks. And I've been thinking about it since I heard it. And that is the line on the song Rise that says, guided by the prayers of our mother's cries, we will rise. And it's just such this powerful, poetic. And it's also, it just makes me think about the generational lineage and that we're, as children, we're built on the lives of our mothers and parents, right? And then, but it's this matriarchal lineage and this real strength in that song. And I wondered, can you tell us the story behind that song?
Arise is written and inspired by women and girls in my life. One being a student that I had that had gone through great adversity, great, 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 great adversity and tragedy, really, and still push through. Our lives would meet and she's still a part of my life. And so the first part of the song is about her. And the second part is inspired by, again, another, you know, tragic story that happened to a little girl that I know. And essentially, the song is about how we all have the capacity to overcome, that when we go through challenges and we go through adversity, you know, those moments of pain can become that which propels you forward, you know, and that you can rise regardless of the scars, you know. And so the line, guarded by the prayers of our mother's cries, I understand it now because I'm blessed to be a mother, but, you know, that whole process of carrying a child, you know, mothers cry silently all the time and they do whatever, they have that instinct to take care of their child, and then bringing the child into this world, there's no other pain, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of bringing a child into this world and then having, you know, your child, you probably go through your whole life. I'm only 4 years in, but I'll probably go through my whole life worried about my child because that is my everything. So even if relationships are disrupted, even if there's trauma involved, even if the relationship with your mother is non-existent, somewhere there's a mother wanting and willing and wishing, you know, the best for their child in whatever capacity they are. So none of us would exist without our mother. So very much that matriarchal, without our mothers, none of us would be here. And so also the inspiration behind the song Here on Earth with the Askeek, it's all about women and having reverence and respect and caring and guarding our mothers and our the women in our life. So
Yeah, it's just so beautiful. And I love asking songwriters about the stories behind their songs. Like what was the inspiration? Because we can listen to the lyrics and, you know, take what it means to us as the listener. But then hearing the composer and the songwriter and the lyricist's story behind each song, it just brings this whole extra layer and dimension. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. Do you have any other favorites on that album?
I love Lullaby. Lullaby, again, was written for my daughter, and it's two lines, well, four lines, but two lines repeated. And it goes, never forget, so never forget where you come from. And that's for all people, whether you're Indigenous or not. So pray every morning, right? So you have a good day. And so at nighttime too. So that's something I'd heard. Those aren't my words. That's something I would have heard throughout my upbringing, you know, from various people. So it's embedded within my existence. They're words that come from a time before time, you know what I mean? That have just found their way to me. And so I really love that song. It's short, but it's so powerful if you understand the words.
Yeah. Well, let's shift gears here because, and I want to talk about your upcoming concert with the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra. This is not your first show with them. You've done, am I right? You've done a few shows with SSO. One show. Okay. So this will be your second show. What is it like to get to perform with the SSO? And can you let us know what you'll be singing?
I think so. I will be singing songs from my album. They will be doing an arrangement of Amazing Grace, which I'm so excited to hear.
Wonderful.
And the second song we're still kind of deciding on, but I know Amazing Grace will be there. So this is my second time. The first time I did a Christmas special and it was directed by the fantastic, fabulous Maria Fuller. It was an amazing experience. I'm so in love with her. I watch her and follow her on social media and she's my inspiration because I think she's fantastic. I was a little bit, you know, deer in the headlights. It was overwhelming. I was going through personal challenges at that same time that was taking away my light, but nonetheless, so I couldn't fully immerse myself in the experience. Mm-hmm. However, this time, I'm in a different space in life and I can't wait to be present. I can't wait to turn on all of my senses because I love music. Like I'll start crying at a concert. People are wondering what's wrong with her, but I'm just so moved by music.
Yeah.
It awakens all of my cells and all of my nerve endings. And so I'm so excited to just take a moment and try to, you know, permanently embed the memories in my head. Because it's, you know, it doesn't come every day. I'd love for it to come every day, but.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't that be great? So I'm very, very excited. I have such respect for everybody who puts the show together, everyone who has dedicated their lives to picking up their instrument and having that space where we all come together. It's so exciting.
Yeah. Awesome. Did you get a say in the arrangements? Like, have you gotten to listen to the arrangements beforehand, or will this sort of be the first, that first rehearsal, will that be the first experience?
It'll be the first experience. Like I was asked, but I said, no, I trust your creative genius. I'm excited to just compliment whatever comes. So I'm excited to hear. Yeah.
Well, what are you working on right now? What's next for you?
I'm in a transitional space in life, trying to create a healthy space of security and safety. And I've managed to do that. And so I'm just kind of recovering from that transition of going from an unhealthy space to finding my own autonomy and my own voice and creating a healthier space for my daughter and I. And so I haven't been able to focus on music. When I go through my own adversity, that's the one thing that falls dormant. You know, if I'm in a space where I suppose my soul is in a space of unsafety, then because my singing and my musical self is tied to my soul, I kind of fall dormant and I don't even sing actually. Mm. And so that's when I know, okay, something's not right in my life. I need to do something to help myself. I need to, you know, manifest a different space. And so I'm just coming back to music, picking up my guitar. I'm putting lyrics together. So I'm returning, I guess, to my true self and just being patient in the process of healing.
Yeah.
So it's coming.
And you know what, Fallon, that's just such a wonderful reminder for all of us. I think oftentimes those of us that find like identity in being a musician, when that's gone, it's like, where did we go? Mm-hmm. But just to note that's like an arrow to there's, you know, something off, and that your focus has shifted, and that's okay and a perfectly normal part of being an artist. Mm-hmm. I remember at the very beginning of COVID, everything got canceled, like everything, right? Of course yeah. It did. And it needed to, right? For the safety of everyone. And I remember just like not playing the piano for 6 weeks. And I was like, I've never done this before. Like I've never not played the piano for 6 weeks in my life. And it was like, did I just like give it up or what? But then it's like, it slowly comes back. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it's really nice. It's comforting to know as an artist that like other artists go through those phases.
Mm-hmm. And it's an indicator, you know, because music, yeah. I think music is, it connects us on a deeper level, on a holistically deeper level. So it acts as an indicator, right?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. That's great. And on top of your life as a musician and a mom, you're also like a full-time teacher, right? You're so busy. We've had actually quite a few teachers on the YXC Divas show who are also balancing that life of a performing artist as well as life as a teacher. Mm-hmm. And so it's a busy time.
It is a busy time. Like it's single mom. Then I'm, you know, I work with in an Indigenous program here in Saskatoon. It's called the Miupa Matchman Program. It's in its fourth year, but we create, a safe haven for inner city Indigenous youth to come and connect to who they are or learn about who they are to develop a healthy sense of Indigeneity. And so it's my daughter and then it's my kids here who are like my kids, right? And providing agency to them in whatever capacity they need, supports. And then it's teaching. And then it's music. Yeah. And in between there, I'm trying to get my master's.
Oh my goodness.
So music has fallen below, but not because it's less important, because everything else just, I can't not be here for my kids, you know?
And absolutely.
Yeah.
So. And I mean, as artists, like you go through seasons, right? Like mm-hmm. There's a season for that focus on music and then there's a season, right? And so, yeah, I think that's, oh my goodness, and a master's degree. Goodness. Well, it's just been such a pleasure getting to chat with you. We're going to wrap up with a few rapid fire questions that I'm asking everybody on this series. No wrong answers. Go with your gut. Can you point to a moment you knew you wanted to be a musician?
I've always loved being on stage. I've always loved that moment when you know your soul connects with the soul of whoever's listening in the audience. I love that. That small, minute second of you feel the shift of energy. I love that. So I would say, have I always wanted to be a musician? I've always wanted to share music. Does that make me a musician? I'm not sure.
I love that. What a good reframe. That's so beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What is your desert island album?
Oh boy. I'm one of the people who stands in front of the McDonald's menu and can't decide. You know, I don't have favorites because I love too many things. I don't know, something with a really good guitar in the background, I suppose.
Do you have a pre-performance ritual?
It's always prayer. I always make a point to be mindful of those who came before me. So whether it be my late cook-um, my late auntie mom who's just passed last year from cancer, my family, my students, I'll picture my students in my head, my daughter. So it's always taking a moment to visualize why am I here and who's more important. So grounding myself. If I don't do that, I get very nervous. So
it's just that reminder.
Yeah.
If you could give one piece of musical advice to a fellow musician out there, what would it be?
Stay true. Know your truth. Tell your story and never be afraid of, telling that story. There's beauty in our pain and it doesn't define us, but it shapes us to who we are. And yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming on Loud and Clear. I will have links to everything that we talked about, all of your music in the show notes. Thanks again for coming on and talking
with me. So thank great you. You got it worked out.
And that is a wrap on our episode and this week's installment of the YXE Divas series. Again, it's just been such a pleasure being able to connect with people from my home city and being able to amplify and elevate the homegrown talent Saskatoon has. You are going to want to get your tickets to this event. So it's saskatoonsymphony.org/event/YXE Divas. Or even if you type in Saskatoon YXE Divas, you are going to get link to save your seats and buy some tickets to TCU Place. And also, it will be live streamed. And so if you can't be there in person, there is a recording that will be available. And the live stream is really quite phenomenally done. It's absolutely professional. And I've enjoyed many a concerts from the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra through their concert stream app. So you can check that out. Again, the links are always in the show notes down below. And I will see you back here next week with our next installment. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.